नमस्ते। टुडे आई वुड लाइक टू शेयर टू स्टेटमेंट्स आई हैड रेड इन वन ऑफ माय टीचर्स अर्लीस्ट बुक्स। आई डोंट थिंक दैट बुक इज अवेलेबल नाउ। द बुक्स नेम जेंटल हैमर, फ्रेंडली सॉर्ड, साइलेंट एरो। And here he talks about the natural state, Sahaj Sthiti. What is this elusive natural state? And it is surprisingly very simple. It is what is. What is the natural state, not what should have been and not what should be. So he says, the what is the Sahaj Sthiti, the natural state of phenomenality. It is original, ordinary, natural, normal, witnessed by the whole mind, not tainted by the split mind of the involved human being. The involved human being that views all things from the divisive viewpoint of subject-object. Let us take this to an extreme. Normally, when something happens in our lives, and mostly it has got to do with what someone says to us, and we react to it. This reaction is largely unconscious in the sense that it is based on our conditioning. And so, what a person says is interpreted by us a certain way. Based on that conditioning, and through that filter, we react. This reaction is based on the ego with its sense of doership. So the what is becomes a problem. So we can imagine that. Supposing the same person said something to us and we were a blank slate or a blank screen, there would be no reaction. The what is, which is what the person said, would be left alone, so to speak. Now, this does not mean this is the way to function through life. It is impossible. Because we are functioning based on our conditioning and our nature. But the key, which is the foundation of the Gita, is the sense of doership. So, this split mind is the ego with its sense of doership, and the whole mind. Is when the sense of doership has been erased from the equation, and we can see the situation holistically. And this Sahaj Sthiti then becomes literally a way of being and navigating through life's journey. We find we are more and more anchored in our being. Our defenses are not up immediately. Our weapons are not directed at the other instantly. And so on and so forth. This natural state places us in a zone, one could call it, of equanimity and calm. We have seen the show for what it is. This can only happen when this thorn of holding people responsible and hating and condemning and judging them, as well as myself, is removed. Goldsmith referred to this when we see errors in individuals, what we feel are errors, as the carnal mind. Which he referenced from the Gospels. Nobody is doing it deliberately. It is the way the ego is designed and programmed with the sense of doership. This has been revealed to the sage that it is the one source consciousness. Not only operating through everyone, but within which all appearances arise. Whenever we find we are mired in judgments, you know, it could be even judging political parties, celebrity figures, and then closer to us, friends, colleagues, neighbors. This Sahaj Sthiti is then overridden by the sense of doership. For sincere seekers of truth, this contemplation and reflection, which Nisargadatta Maharaj referred to as earnestness, this shows, especially to the master, to the guru, how an individual ego is drawn to the teaching. Goldsmith referred to it as commitment. How committed are we to the truth? That every time this arises during the course of the day, whether it is with our spouse, whether it is the news we see, anything. How quick the sense of doership gets overlaid on people. And that is what causes us to suffer psychologically, without knowing it in most cases. This is the journey of awareness, from unawareness to awareness. To see the machinations of the ego, how it works, how it distorts, how it twists, without doing anything about it, just witnessing and seeing that this is its nature. Because the ego trying to do something about the ego is where the frustration arises. It is the seeing, the witnessing, the witness consciousness, the Sakshi Bhav, which brings about the transformation. And this brings me to the next statement in the same book after a few pages, which In one sentence, it says what happens with spiritual awakening. When the great awakening happens, note the word happens. When the great awakening happens, it is the great magnificent leap into impersonality. It is the great magnificent leap into impersonality. From personhood, me and my story, me versus you, you versus me, this leap where things are witnessed, being done through someone, not by someone. The ego loves to take everything very personally. So if you find that you are quite critical of someone in your life, or maybe most people in your life, most of the time, it is to be looked at. If you find you are critical of yourself most of the time, it is to be looked at. This is the earnestness, this is the commitment which a sage or master looks for in his students. Whatever may be the path, maybe a Raja Yoga master, Kriya Yoga master, Advaita master, they are really not concerned with personality flaws, so to speak, in those who come to them. They know that is the nature of personality. We all have certain quirks, distortions, because nobody's conditioning is perfect. But the commitment to Sat, in spite of the personality, to the truth, the earnestness for the truth shall set you free. What is this you? This you is the me with its sense of doership. That is why grasping this concept is quite paramount on the path of Advaita, at least this stream of Advaita, perhaps not some other stream of Advaita. This is the meaning of not to, a Dvait. The subject-object relationship now transforms to an object-object relationship, because the understanding is there that the me and the other are both instruments through whom God's will functions. Earlier, I was playing the role of subject, or rather pseudo-subject, and passing judgment on people. Now, through understanding, I have realized that I too am an object in manifestation like the other. And that is how I start living my life. More and more in the natural state. More and more in equilibrium. Equanimity. Beautiful words. More and more with an empty mind, empty in the sense that it is not carrying this load within itself of hatred, malice, condemnation, blame, or even pride, arrogance, guilt, and shame. And so the mind is open and available For what is? That is the glorious light of impersonality. Like a child whose ego has not still developed, is fully available and open to any adult, a parent's friend who comes to the house, whoever it may be. There's an innate sense of equality, one could call it, because preconceived notions have not taken root. And this teaching is an invitation to remember that being which was never really lost. That innocence. We have pronounced most people in our lives as guilty unless proven innocent. That is what the adult with hardwired conditioning, tunnel vision, the adult ego which has got constricted and narrowed, does. All right. If anyone would like to ask questions or share anything, you are welcome to now. My only request is to not have a phone held in your hand which shakes, and to make sure that your voice is audible and that there are no distractions around you, because it gets difficult for us then to hear what you have to say. Yes, Meena.
Hey, Namaste Gautam, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, yeah, thank you so much. So my question is, I know a big part of the teachings that you try to convey, you know, a large part of it talks about like God's will, everything is God's will. I think I sort of remember you one time saying, correct me if I'm wrong. And I've sort of heard this like teachings from like other sources as well, like that we have like this higher self, right? Or we have this sort of like, you can call it higher self, you can call it pure consciousness, you can call it Atma, you know, like a soul. And, you know, that Atma is like a direct link to maybe, let's say, God, right? And it is that higher self, or it is that Atma, that actually has free will, according to some teachings, not yours, or like, and I think you mentioned once, like, oh, like the soul chooses its journey, right? So could it be likely, like there are teachings out there, like, oh, the soul is even choosing its parents, the soul is choosing its location, the soul is like planning all its life out. So could it be, I'm just trying to find this distinction between like, it, does our soul or does our higher self actually have free will? Does this egoic self maybe not have that free will? Can you sort of walk me through this? Because this is really interesting, right? It all seems interconnected, but then there's a difference. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Sure. So my one suggestion is to not try and cross-pollinate different teachings or teachers, because it can lead to confusion. I will clarify it from the point of view of this teaching.
Okay.
So God's will is brought in as a concept as apart from the individual's will, my will. So what this teaching says is, so far you have thought, you have made decisions, you are the doer of your actions, and it is my will prevailing, which I get rewarded for, punished for. And then the teaching brings in God's will as the polaric opposite of my will, to show that, look, there's a larger picture. It is not just all about you. The universe has, in fact, conspired to give you a set of genetics and conditioning, which you call your nature, on the basis of which you act. So your precious my will is not that precious. When this understanding seeps in, that there is a force which is making me breathe, which is pumping my heart, which is making this planet revolve around the sun, There is a higher will, which is certainly not mine. Then there's an opening. There's a potential to see the larger picture. So let's make no mistake, God's will and my will are both concepts. But they are brought in for what? They are brought in to show the ego with its sense of doership what is behind it all. And ultimately, as Ramana Maharshi said, both thorns have to be thrown away. Both concepts have to be thrown away. That is why concepts are introduced. Because ultimately, how can my will be apart from God's will? Do you see? So, why is this introduced this way? So that the psychological suffering which this individual ego is facing in daily living has the potential to be annihilated. That is the only objective. The objective is not a theory to be understood. The mind wants to make everything a theory. That is the nature of the mind, and to understand it step by step by step by step. Fair enough. My teacher loved questions because he said there was so much confusion out there. So, as far as this teaching is concerned, the focus is daily living. How do I find this Sahaj Sthiti, this peace of mind in daily living? And therefore, the concepts were presented. Now, you are quite right. There's another concept that everything is predetermined in the pre-birth stage. That is also there. There are books on the subject. We ourselves have published a book called Your Soul's Plan, where some patients, some very extreme cases like an alcoholic, a terror victim, and so on, are regressed to the pre-birth stage where they are with a council of elders, so to speak, who are determining what is going to transpire in the coming lifetime and who are going to be around this person. So you see, you can pick and choose the concepts which appeal to you, but what can happen is you can get confused in the process. So while it's fun, while it's interesting to have different viewpoints, stick to that one which you know I am able to put at least my finger in the pond of peace. Something shifts when I listen to it. Something really kind of is imbibed. Therein is my peace to be found. Ultimately, the jnani, for example, the state the jnani is in, you could call it the highest state, is a state of pure potentiality. That is why, in the presence of a jnani, what we consider miracles would occur. But the jnani knew that the me was annihilated and never considered it as my siddhi or my power. Because the jnani was one with the source, the self, God realized the presence did the transforming. So, this is very important to understand how I navigate through life, my journey, bringing it down to the brass tacks. Where's my peace to be found? Do I really have free will? Yes, of course I do, because I have to take decisions in life. Life is about decisions, but now I understand that free will is not what I thought it was. I know it is a mechanism of functioning through daily living, and I use my buddhi and go through life by and by, knowing the results have never been in my control. That is what happens. That actually leads to the end of this question and this debate on free will, no free will, and so on and so forth. When I felt oneness with life, with being, with the what is, and not the what should be and what could be, and so on and so forth. When all that is now, the slate is clean. That is how I live my life day by day.
Okay. If you don't mind, I just have one last question. Is it okay? Just
Yes,
one more?
absolutely. Absolutely.
The my last question basically is, and this is again just an idea. I'm just trying to like play around with this. I'm not saying like my opinion, my thought process could be totally wrong, which is why I just want your opinion. Is it likely that this whole idea of like lack of free will, right? I mean, sure, free will as a mechanism of daily living, like you said, but otherwise lack of free will, that ultimately it's actually God's will. Is it very likely that this is maybe a more advanced spiritual, like again, sorry to bring in the word concept here, but I just have to. But like, is it something, is this whole idea, does it actually require a lot of spiritual progress? Like, do you have to be somewhere like higher in your spiritual evolving to even get to the point where it's like, oh yeah, this isn't me, like that, you know, this is God operating through me. So is it likely that it actually requires a lot of spiritual evolving to even get to this point? Is this something a little bit advanced? What's your opinion?
So, thank you again for this question. There are two ways to look at it. In my case, I found it to be the simplest teaching because it validated my life's experience. When I came across this teaching and I looked at the major events in my life, I came to the immediate, it wasn't even a conclusion, it was a knowing that these events had really nothing to do with me. I didn't play an active part in a certain event. It happened. So I took very naturally, and therefore I found this very simple. For me, it was, in fact, it could not get simpler, and that's possibly because I had a very simple mind when I came across this teaching. So that is one way. The other is both Maharaj, which is my teacher's guru and my teacher, call this the teaching of the last resort. Now, this does not mean it's a complex, advanced teaching at all. It is the bare bones, it is the simplest. But what does this mean? The teaching of the last resort. Maharaj said he was the guru of the last resort. He did not mean that he was at the top of the hierarchy. He meant when all you have done and tried, tested, searched, gone here, gone there, everything is done. This is where you come to. This is where you come and rest because it is so simple, not because it is complex. So, day by day, all actions to investigate, are they my actions? Did they happen based on what I saw, tasted, touched, smelled? Was all that in my control? The phone call I'm about to receive, do I know who's going to call me the next moment? That person says something. I say, let's meet for a coffee. If that person didn't say, let's meet, I would not say, let's meet. It's so interconnected, the whole show, that I start marveling at it. That I'm just a puny, tiny dot. I'm just one piece in this gigantic jigsaw puzzle. And I am not what I thought I was. I am really not the grand individual who I believed myself to be. Then it becomes very humbling, a very humbling thought. And what naturally happens, compassion starts arising towards other people to see how helpless we are in that sense, and towards myself. So qualities of compassion, kindness, and my teacher laid emphasis on tolerance and generosity. Not tolerance in the sense, oh, I have to put up with you, but tolerance in the sense of knowing that God is behind this person and their act. In that sense, when I find this shift in qualities that start emerging, rather than qualities based on separation, on split, and so on and so forth, then I know that this awakening, gradual awakening, is now happening. So it's really not a goal to be achieved and this grand thing, am I worthy of this, and so on and so forth. According to me, This teaching is far more simpler than other teachings I came across. But as they say, different strokes for different folks. Some of this may appeal to you, some may not. The whole may appeal, the whole may not, depending on your individual destiny.
Makes sense. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank
Namaste.
you. Namaste. Thank you. Yes, Ekta.
Sai Ram Gautam ji,
Sorry.
thank you for coming live. Actually, I really wanted to talk to you regarding a few experiences I had. There was a time, I felt lot more connected with the world, and I felt like that, I'm a part of it, and there was a sense of belongingness somehow, because I have started my career, so the corporate and everything is becoming a little demanding, and I've seen, the way peacefully come and come calmly I've tried to deal with situations. It is somehow is assumed to be very passive and not like, you're not being courageous enough to take actions, and there are a lot of times you're not that much strong as you're supposed to be. So it led to a lot of self-criticism, and now I feel like, I've criticized myself, others around me, and it puts me in a lot of guilt, and I feel like, there's no going back, and it just puts me in a lot of guilt. I feel like lot of disconnect inside my heart. So I don't know. I feel like, I have disappointed God. I've disappointed myself. Just hurtful.
You see, that is the whole thing. Yet, your name is Ekta. Isn't that beautiful? Who feels disappointed? Who feels guilty? I have this ideal that I have to be a certain way, otherwise, I will disappoint God. This is the pressure the ego puts on itself. The ego has been created by God. That is what we have been saying. You are a creation of God only, not apart from God. So these are all, I know it may sound a bit harsh, but these are the games the ego plays. I have disappointed God. How can it be possible? Is it really possible if you are a part of God that you can disappoint God? It is not possible. But the ego loves to feel small. Because now it has an identity. This is who I am. Yes, it is amazing that the awareness is there that I at work have been criticizing others and myself. That is most beautiful. Many people are not aware of this at their work. Ekta, please look at things positively. This awareness is there. If the awareness is there, where's the question of reaching the point of no return? Is it really possible? It is just a reconfiguration, just seeing things, stepping back. And I must admit, the corporate world has this energy to suck one in because it's all about competition. It's all about trying to be better than the colleague and so on and so forth. But at the same time, my teacher used to say it is the most beautiful place to see the teaching in action. Because work and the corporate world is relationships, rinanubandhan, dealing with people. And so he used to be very much looking forward every Sunday when I would go a bit earlier and go into his room, and he would ask me, how was your week at work? So these are opportunities where I can see that maybe the thinking which was based on doership is what led to my suffering. So do look at it as a glass half full and not half empty. It is painful, you are going through pain, but if you start seeing people in the light of this understanding, it is not that it is going to make your work situation easier, but it will make it simpler. Then you will decide based on my nature, based on the corporate environment I am in, is this suiting me or not? Or is this really taking away my peace of mind? I will have to decide as an individual. But now my decision will be based on a clear seeing. My decision will now be based on a response and not on a reaction. And so Ekta will have to decide, have I found that I've lost my soul, so to speak, in this environment? Do I look out for another environment? Do I find this environment toxic for myself? And so on and so forth. These decisions have to be taken. But now I am taking it with the support of the eye of wisdom, not the eyes of duality, but the single eye. That is where I am now. That in what way have I contributed to the toxicity, in what way have others? I really look at it very objectively. If I find no, there is scope. If I operate with this new understanding in the same environment and I try it out, maybe there will be a change. That could be one option. The other is, no, I feel that there's no scope here. That is another option, and so on and so forth. So this teaching will not tell you what to do and what not to do. It says, do precisely that which you think and feel you should do, knowing you are not the doer and nor are others. That is what happens. And so then you find that what was a dire situation emotionally now flips. Now flips because the light of understanding is shining. It may not take your troubles away at work because people will still be who they are. But the understanding is like a balm. Because I have seen them through the light of understanding. I am not here to transform them and tell people, you are right, you are wrong. That is not my job. I have to see where my feet are. Am I able to hold myself there, or do I take a decision to move? So please be gentle on yourself, because that is what is required in this instance. Where are you based, may I ask?
I am in Delhi currently, but these days I'm going to Mumbai very frequently because of my work. So it's like I am at both the places.
Okay, so if you do happen to be in Mumbai and there's a satsang at my home, then you are more than welcome to come.
I would love to. I would love to because you have been. It, though I'm talking to you first time, but you and Nikhilji, everybody, I think you are part of my family, and I really look up to you guys.
Okay,
Thank
take
you. Thank
all
Sai
the
Ram.
best. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Yes, Vandana.
Hello, Gautam. Hope all is well with you.
All is well by the grace of God.
I know. So, Gautam, there's a little confusion. There is, we use the word or letter, both you can say, is I. And we associate it with ego. Now, there's a little statement of Raman Maharishi, which I will read to you, in which he says that if you find this vichar marg too hard for you, you can go on repeating I, and that will lead you to the same goal. There is no harm in using I as a mantra, it is the first name of God.
Yes.
Is it like an oxymoron?
No, he is just saying, I mean, of course, he spoke in Tamil, let's not forget that. But it is the distinction between the I and the me. You see, it is the same I, which, as Goldsmith would say, is over everyone's head, the same being. Imagine if you go to a meeting, okay, a corporate meeting, and various people come for that meeting. It is the same I above everyone's head, the same sense of being which brings them together. But they are functioning as individual me's based on their conditioning and nature. So what Maharshi is saying is to remember that I constantly. I, not me, 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 me. That is my understanding of the statement. If thine eye be single, thy whole body will be full of light. Because the me is there. It's always trying to remember itself because it wants to survive and live as a separate individual ego. Our mantra actually is me. Me, me, me. My problems, my money, my health, my this, my that, my relationships. And this is I, constantly I, not me, me, me. That is how I interpret his teachings.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's like, imagine, I keep saying this, the person who bugs you the most, immediately think of the eye over his head. It's the same eye, the single eye, the one eye. That is what it is.
Okay.
All
Thank
right.
you.
Thank you. Yes, is that Sravanti?
Avanti. Yes.
Yes, Sravanti. Are you part of Isha Yoga?
No, actually, I'm a Satya Sai devotee.
Okay, because I saw that snake ring around your finger and it reminded me.
Yes, first time when I completely broken down, I just start listening to Sadhguru videos a lot at the beginning. So I do that. Actually, I didn't have any goal. So it's so uncomfortable for me to be in the presence of my parents or everyone because they are always saying me do something. So I got attracted to your videos and I found comfort in your videos. And few months ago, my parents got separated, and I felt their pain. I understood their pain, but either they are in anger or they are in pain. They are crying or they are in anger. I just be with them, try so hard to change them. Then I realized I can't do anything. And few minutes ago, my father is crying in front of me so much, but I am not getting affected by his pain. I understood his pain totally. I'm not feeling any pain from inside. I'm there, just there with him. So I'm emotionless, what I didn't understand anything, but I want them to be happy. This is what
But the point, the question is, are you feeling pain and are you happy?
I felt pain few months back, days back, weeks back, but now I realized that there is no point in me in pain. I cannot change them. And I'm suffering myself. I understood this.
Yes.
So
So that
I
is a
am in calm.
beautiful understanding.
Oh, I'm in.
Pain may arise in the moment. After all, they are your parents.
Yes.
It will hurt. But that pain will not be extended in the duration of time into psychological suffering.
Yes, I'm not suffering anymore. But they are trying so much hard to see me. How can you be so emotionless? Like they are behaving like, but I'm not getting affected by them. I'm telling them to do sadhana, but they are not listening. So I don't know what to do. I just left. But I'm
See,
there with them.
it is not our job to tell people what to do. Yes, we can share our point of view. We can express ourselves because, after all, we have their goodness at heart. But beyond that, we have to leave it to their destiny. This
Yes.
has to be understood. We have to leave people to their destiny. We wish well, we mean well, but
He's always telling I will suicide. I don't want to live anymore. So I'm afraid. Then at the same time, I am in my heart and just I'm poor. I just left to the God that I'm praying, and I found peace in it.
now, can I ask how old you are?
33 years old.
And do you have a job?
No, I didn't have any job. I used to work in school, but my children are suffering, so I left the job. I'm housewife.
But are you financially secure?
Yes, my husband is earning. And I didn't have much desires. I'm not interested in shopping, movies, anything. I just buy books, read books, and listen to these videos, and just simply sit under a tree doing nothing.
How wonderful.
Sometimes, sometimes my mind tells that, what the hell am I doing? Nothing, I'm doing nothing. Then again, the thought will come, what is there to do?
You see, if you have that option of not working for a living, for example, and you are made that way that you'd rather not work for a living, so be it. The problem is if you have to work for a living and you are not inclined to. Fortunately, you don't have that problem.
If I have to, if my mother throwed me to work in school, and I am completely in it, how much ever the principal used to tell me, you are wrong in this situation, nothing would affect me. I just simply listen to them. I am there. I am not afraid of the job. If even they have fired me, I can go simply put a namaskar and just leave. And I understood the pain of the principal also. The pressure from the parents to the principal and principal to us and us to children. This is going from one to another. I understood the whole drama, and I am not interested to, take their what they want to say. I
That's very
found so much
beautiful.
distance.
That's very beautiful. So basically, you are happy doing nothing, and the universe is supporting you in that, and there's no psychological suffering while you are doing nothing.
Yes.
You see, the problem with doing nothing, this is very important, is the thinking mind can become very rampant. Because when
Ah.
there's nothing to do, that's what happens. And that is why sometimes teachers say, look, you have to ask yourself, am I at peace or is my mind doing the cartwheel all the time? In which case, if you're doing nothing, do something. Whether it is, engaging in social service or helping someone, whatever it may be, because then the focus shifts to the other. The obsession with me and my mind and my story and all is now diverted. So that is a very important question. Am I happy doing nothing, sitting under the tree doing nothing? Or is my mind in turmoil? In your case, it seems to be you are quite fine. Many people would want to be in your shoes.
Initial days, actually, I used to feel some uncomfortable, but I started looking at that discomfort in my body, and I'm enjoying the household work, and I take Sunday Balavikas classes to children. I don't focus more on the content, but I focus more on the silence. In that silence, whatever it comes, I just express it out. And the children look at me, they understood what I'm doing. They get it most of the time.
Children do get it because they don't have the baggage and burden of conditioning.
Yes.
And then, if you can tell us where that tree is, we'll all come and sit with you.
It's my home. I'm in Telangana, Warangal.
All right.
Actually, can I talk?
Yes, sorry.
I have given rent to some other, and their pain, their situations became my suffering, and they left home. Actually, I given money to them and they left because they are not paying rent. My husband is torturing me. They are not paying rent. So I given money to them and they left, and now it is nobody is there, and the whole home is mine. So I'm just simply sitting there meditating, doing nothing. And my husband is completely opposite to me. He want money. He want respect. And in my presence, he is changing little by little. But it's okay. Life throws whatever it wants to throw.
No, but first of all, opposites attract, as we know.
No.
And secondly, is there a need for him to change as far as you are concerned?
He is suffering. That's why he wants to change. He wants to change.
He wants to change and he knows he wants to change because he knows he is suffering.
Yes.
Then it's fine. I thought you said you were wanting him to change.
No, I found peace with whatever his behavior.
Very good. That's beautiful. It's Thank you
And
for
I love your videos. I sit and hear videos 2 hours, 3 hours, just simply. Thank you so much for your
Thank
videos in
you.
YouTube.
Thank you. I enjoyed speaking with you and thank you for sharing. Of course, the thing is, while we don't feel pain, we should try our best not to give others pain too. All right. Thank you. Yes, Dipti.
Hi Gautam, hope you're doing well.
I am well. Thank you. Hope you're well too. Where are you? Are
Yeah.
you in Germany or?
Yeah, I'm in Germany right now. Yeah. I've been reading your book Heart to Heart and I'm loving it. I've not completed it yet, but it's very, I don't know, when I read, for example, when I was reading the book Power of Now as well, I had this very calming experience. And the same thing I feel with your books as well. So before this, I read your Explosion of Love. That was also, it had very, the different topics that you touched. For example, there was a topic where you mentioned about a painting, about there's small topics which really touched me, and it's very beautiful. And in this one as well, I was actually, I did my schooling in Mangalore, and I was until my 10th standard, I was there. So Mangala Devi Temple and the Kadri Temple are the two temples I usually go, and those are my favorite places. And I was pleasantly surprised about to get to know about the history. I never knew this part of
Yes.
what you have written in the book. So when I was mentioning this to my parents as well, they were also not, at least my father was telling me he saw the Gorakhnath, how do I say, the in Kadri Temple, there is a statue or something. But I don't know, I've never registered it in my mind. So there are many revelations kind of things in your book and your experiences. When I read it, it's like we are living through your experience in the book. So just want to share. It's a nice experience reading your book. And yeah, I think I'll complete it soon.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, there was a devotee of Sri Aurobindo and the mother of Pondicherry who read the book. And he said, first, I thought, why is someone who is talking on Advaita writing about temples and all that? And then he said, my next thought was, isn't it nicer if he's directing people who are inclined to go to sacred places and temples to go there rather than to go to pubs and nightclubs and all that? So he was just telling me how he was processing this book. And then he said, then I realized how even Adi Shankara has, done sthapna of the most sacred places in this land of India and was guided by the Devi Shakti. Let's not forget that. So people have this idea that someone who's teaching Advaita should be in the formless Nirgun Brahman and all that. But my teacher would say consciousness is all there is. There's nothing apart from consciousness. So everything is absorbed, is a part of the experience of life. And of course, that changes from destiny to destiny, individuals to individuals, and that is how it plays out. For example, someone once asked me at a talk that what is the need you have of going and giving talks in Bangalore and here and there? I said, there's no need. It is where destiny takes me. Now, some masters, for example, like Ramana Maharshi, sat in one place. Satya Sai Baba, I believe, sat in Puttaparthi in one place, basically didn't really step out much out of India. Some masters, like the Buddha, Anand Mahima, their destiny was to go from town to town. My parampara, Nisargadatta Maharaj didn't really travel and give satsangs, but Siddharameshwar Maharaj, his guru, went and did that. So you see, destinies unfold differently. And with this book, I thought, why am I holding this part of my life back? Just because I give talks on Advaita and I have been with an Advaita teacher for 10 years, let me bring this out. If it touches someone somewhere, inspires them in some way, they may not be on the path of Advaita, but maybe on some other journey, then it would be beautiful. And that is how this book came out.
Sure. I think I have another takeaway from this book, especially because this book, as in
I see that you're receptive or you're open to all the kinds of teachers and all the kinds of experiences, right? So at least when I was starting my journey, I had this, how do I say, very limited thoughts. Like if I'm into one teacher, I'm like, no, I don't go into another teaching and I don't listen to it. But I think over the years, after listening to you, I think I changed my perspective. It's not like I just learned to be open to everybody. So I think that your book also mentions the same. So
Yes.
it was
Yes,
really
you
nice.
see, because I didn't have confusion as to where I belong as far as the spiritual path is concerned. I was going back to one master's home every Sunday. That clarity was there. But that did not mean that I don't explore, I don't meet other masters, I don't imbibe. They have certain beautiful things I have picked up on the journey from meeting people. But thankfully, there was no confusion, because this can lead to confusion also, that do I belong here? Do I belong there? Do I belong there? So luckily that didn't happen for me. And from the start, by the grace of God, that full clarity was there as to where I belong. Otherwise, then it becomes a very arduous journey, because one is constantly seeking in different directions and one does not know where one belongs. What does where one belongs mean? Not physically. What is in my heart? What has touched me the most? That is where I belong. That is why Heart to Heart. That is why the title of the book comes from the dialogue between disciple and master, where Irina Tweedy, the Russian disciple of the Sufi mystic Bhai Sahib, says, "What is the meaning of the word parampara?" And he says it means heart to heart. And she said, "Really? I thought it meant lineage." And his reply was, "It's the same thing." Okay, thank you. Yes, Balaji.
Sir, namaste. Namaste, Maharaj.
Namaste.
I too have read your book, by buying it via Kindle. Art to art. Right now, that Venom third part is coming out, The Last Dance. Right, apropos your book. What I would like to state is that you have done your subtlety well. Right, you have not exposed yourself to the fullest. Therefore, I expect a sequel to be coming out sooner. That's my hunch, actually. Not one, maybe two. I guess so. I believe so. It's a fantastic book. If not for the self-effacing attitude you express through this book would have been like an autobiography of a yogi. Right. I think you controlled yourself not to express too much with an intention to bring out another one, or because of your guru's grace, Ramesh Balsekar ji and Siddha Magareshwar Maharaj. Thank you so much for the book. It's a quick read, actually. Right, one can read it within an hour or so. And I've been wanting to ask you this question for quite long, actually. And I think today is the day that is fixed by Swami Nisargadatta Maharaj to get myself out from the cocoon and to ask you this basic, very basic question. Leaving aside this predetermined stuff, the prarabdha and other past karma, the karma theory. An ordinary man like Swami Nisargadatta Maharaj, a bidi seller in Bombay, to have become enlightened, to achieve the highest point of what Buddha achieved, Hastadagata, or what Ramana Maharishi has achieved. Ramana Maharishi for the South, Nisargadatta Maharaj for the West, as far as India is concerned. How is it possible for him to just hear from his guru, Siddharameshwar Maharaj, that you are not what your what you take yourself to be. That's all he has heard from his guru. And he went back home as a BD seller and he started working on this stuff. Right. He started working like my Maharaj told me that I am not what myself, what I take myself to be. I am beyond something, beyond my regularity, beyond my regular frame and stuff. So can you please tell us the process by which Nishar, an ordinary Maharaj, Ravikant, whatever his born name is, became Nisargadatta Maharaj? What is the process, the simple process? No, he has said it in his book, I am that I would be looking at my thoughts, I would be eliminating my thoughts one by one and stuff like that. From your perspective, Maharaj, Gautam Maharaj, would you be able to tell me the simple process for novices like us? Just, you know, I am aware of Ramana Maharishi's teaching and all that stuff, but for an ordinary human being with tons of thoughts every day, right? The special point here is Nisargadatta Maharaj, he did not do any japa, he did not do any nama japa. So
yes.
What he did actually, what he did?
So that's a beautiful question, and thank you for sharing your views on the book. I don't know if there'll be a volume 2, though there's sufficient material, but I have to see if volume 1 sells enough or not and take a call. So
no, it would be selling out, Maharaj, but during the promotion time, you know, Kindle is, I think, 375 or something. Yeah, during the promotion time, when Amazon announces the promotion stuff, just do give some bit of a discount for other readers. You know, they might be, you know, swinging in to buy the book. Definitely, this book is going to be like an autobiography of Yogi for the beginners of, you know, spirituality.
Thank you. Thank you. Regarding your question on Maharaj, the shortest answer I would give is it was predestined. Now, in phenomenality, yes, I think one thing very beautiful happened, which was the innocence. Maharaj was dragged to the satsang of Siddharameshwar Maharaj by his friend. But the minute he heard these words, that you are that, there was no resistance. There was immediate acceptance and belief because he was a simple paan bidi shop owner who was not loaded with concepts. He took the guru's words as the truth. That is the whole point, and that is what I try to mention many times to people, that to be totally available and open, because the guru is only meaning good for you. But the nature of this mind is to always resist, question, doubt, and create obstacles on which it keeps wanting to trip over. That is, again, when Bhai Sahib clarified a very important point with Irina Tweedy, which gets missed, when he told her that if I, as your guru, call this chair black, and you are telling me it's not black, it's brown, and then to make me feel happy, you are saying, all right, Bhai Sahib, if you say it's black, it's black. No, if I say it is black, you have to see it as black. That is what happened with Maharaj and Siddharameshwar Maharaj. That is my explanation in the phenomenal scheme of things and events that transpired. That is what took place. But yes, everyone comes with their prarabh. Ramana Maharshi's case is a perfect case in point, where as a young child, he went through the experience of death and felt the call of Arunachala. So these were definitely predetermined events. And I think, thank you. It's a really beautiful question you have asked. And these are what can inspire us common guys, girls. You know, these stories are stories. There's another beautiful book I would like to end on this note. There's a Mahabhakta of Shirdi Sai Baba called Anna Sahib Gavankar. A book which is out now is a Jewel of Sai Devotion. At the retreat in Shirdi in early July, I will be referencing some points in this book. But that simplicity, That simple relationship between master and disciple, where the disciple is completely open and not questioning, not even questioning the personality of the master. Now, make no mistake, Shirdi Sai Baba was a rough personality. He would give the choicest abuses also. It was not all this flowers and roses and golden light and calm and serenity, no. But being so open that I am with the truth, it appears I am with an individual, but I am with the truth flowing through this being. That also is predestined if I have that openness and awareness, and the rest of us can try, because even that trying is predetermined. It's beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. So I
Thank you.
will.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. I really enjoyed today's session. Very beautiful questions. And it sounds like a cliche, but I feel that I am equally learning when these questions are being asked, simply because I don't know what I'm going to say, and then I learn from what I am saying. Absolutely crazy. It's really a very very mystical and beautiful. I think anyone who has been brought on this journey, mostly through pain and suffering, sometimes not, sometimes through prarabdha, that one is born this way. From an early age, one has interest in these subjects, because there's that innate knowing that the mundane is not where I can find true happiness. The mundane and the material world is extremely limited. How can that consciousness, which is boundless, ever find satisfaction in the mundane world? Through mundane things, through material things. When that is reached, then that is the inward journey. The external journey is, so to speak, finished. A reversal has started taking place. That is the journey of self-discovery. I've just changed the settings so I can see all of y'all, and we'll be in silence for a minute and then end the session. Thank you. God bless.